Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hi. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody, to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us. As you know, we talk to a lot of coaches on these shows. Somewhere out there, there is someone who is a coach who can help you with almost every aspect of your life or your business, your career, whatever it is. I love talking to coaches. It's become such a big business now because it's great to have a coach who can help you. We have one of those, exactly that, a coach today who is a really unique one. I must say, our guest, Jeffrey Yarbus, has a truly unique career. I'm amazed by what he's doing. He's the CEO of his organization, which is known as Victory Leadership Consulting, headquartered in Round Rock, Texas, where he offers coaching services primarily to health professionals of all kinds. And much of his experiences can be attributed to the 34 years that he spent in the Army. Throughout his Army career, he earned many, many credentials, including a doctorate, a PhD, and a licensed clinical social worker. And as he points out, the Army cultivates leadership, and he likes to learn. So with those credentials, he served as a social worker in the Army. I didn't know there was such a thing, but it's great to hear. In any event, he helped those who were dealing with trauma, whether in the service or having endured it as a civilian before enlisting. And his career is characterized by many firsts, all with an unwavering commitment to social justice. It's not a vocation, he said, it's a personal mandate. Among the things that he did initially, he was the first officer to develop a military curriculum on combat stress control, suicide prevention, harm reduction, and cross-cultural communication, which is still utilized to this day to prevent battle fatigue and to promote resiliency. He also was deployed to Iraq in 2005 as the first military social worker to become a civil affairs officer. And then after 34 years, he retired with the rank of colonel, and his work was not done as he pursues his new adventure. He is the CEO of Victory Leadership Consulting, which, by the way, is a service-connected, disabled veteran-owned small business. And he primarily offers his services of executive coaching and leadership consulting to hospital executives, especially those in the VA, for the Veterans Administration, and he also offers coaching to anyone who works in the medical profession. It's really, in addition to that, by the way, if he's not busy enough, he teaches social work full-time at Tulane University in New Orleans, and he also teaches part-time at Fordham University in New York. So it's a great story and a great background, and I'm really pleased to welcome him to our microphones here at Close Up Talk Radio. Again, his name is Jeffrey Yarbus, and he is based in Round Rock, Texas. What's it like in Round Rock today, Jeff? What kind of a day
is it? It's a little muggy, Doug. Thanks for having me. It's about an hour earlier than there in New York, and it's a little hot and sticky, but we like it here that way.
Yep, I know what you mean. Exactly. Well, listen, it's a real treat to have you with us to talk to us about it. You had a remarkable career in the Army. I don't get the chance to talk to many folks who've had, you know, careers in the Army and in the service that, like yours, 34 years. And really, you became a social worker in the Army. I didn't know there were social workers in the Army. I don't think most people are aware of that. How about that? Is that true?
That's true. In fact, I didn't know. So in the beginning of my career, I was enlisted, and then I was a tank platoon leader. And somebody had once said to me that I had to kind of settle that duality or I wouldn't be good at both. And then I found out we had both and had a terrific career.
Yeah, well, you learned it. You got into it in the Army. What were the outstanding things you did in the service? You were a tank commander. Is that right? You mentioned tanks. Is that right?
That's right. I was a tank platoon leader at the National Training Center, and it really taught me a lot about how the Army worked and really was the beginning of my understanding of the notion of interoperability and how organizations work as a whole. And then later I transitioned to the medical service corps where I became that social worker that you mentioned.
Well, it's interesting that as a coach, you offer services primarily to those in the health field. And really, we talk to many, many coaches on these broadcasts. I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who specializes in the medical field. Who are the kinds of folks that you typically work with? Are there doctors who would come to you for coaching? Tell me.
That's a great question. Yes, so I have the opportunity to work with the Veterans Health Administration. And so right now, I'm coaching several medical center directors of different backgrounds, from executive nursing, physicians, healthcare administration, and I use a form of transpersonal executive life coaching for individuals and groups. And, you know, with this idea that change is inevitable, but growth's not guaranteed. And so I try to bring, you know, new perspective and some cognitive diversity to executives who feel isolated by their duties or the responsibilities for organizations aren't achieving what they hoped, and, you know, help them find the best versions of themselves, maximize capabilities and capacities, and then achieve, in this case, a safer and more beneficial outcome for the patient, in this case, the veteran, which is, you know, personal to me, as well as improve their teams and the environment in which their consumers get care. So it's a wonderful opportunity to work with people who are pretty high-powered, very intelligent, but still are seeking the opportunity to learn and grow.
Tell me a little bit about your experience of doing this in the Army. Why was that a great proving ground to learn, or training ground for doing what you do now? And explain a little bit about what you did while you were in the Army, in this field of social work, kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, my early days in the Army were very formative. I kind of drank the be-all-you-can-be Kool-Aid. My father and my grandfather both served, and I really gravitated towards the notion of it. But as we said earlier, I had no idea that we had Army social workers, and so somebody once said when I was a line officer or an armor officer that I walked the fine line between counseling and caring versus fraternizing better than anybody they had seen. And I didn't know we had social workers, but as time went on, I was able to find my way into that. And you learn a lot about organizational behavior, how people behave under stress. You learn about how the geopolitical issues impact organizations. And understand also in these really difficult moments how people can find the sacred in those moments and be resilient and achieve pretty remarkable things. It was a very spiritual experience to be in combat with people like that and learn from them. And we actually captured some of these lessons in a book called Combat Social Work, and it ties our lessons from war to the human services and medicine, and I've carried that over. And then finally, I had the opportunity to be the first social worker to command a medical brigade of over 2,000 folks and a combat hospital. So it kind of culminated like Sherman, Potter, and MASH, a little bit more sophisticated than that. But And those opportunities really translate well to executive medicine and coaching on the outside.
What a great experience. And where did you do that? Was that in Iraq?
I did civil affairs in Iraq, so I started learning about executive medicine actually from the Iraqi Surgeon General. And then later on at what was then Fort Hood, Texas, I was able to command the combat hospital, and our unit prepared for the COVID response that hit North and South America.
Talk to me a little about dealing with combat stress control. Do you find many guys who come back from duty abroad who have faced combat are having serious problems? I'm sure you do. Go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's a wonderful question, and thank you for asking it, because, you know, it's, say this carefully, if you have a physical injury, not that I would trade places with that person, you know, it's obvious your injury rallies support to you. People treat you like a rock star, rightfully so, and they may even assume there's some psychological issues there. But when the wounds are invisible and the sort of the gray cells get mushed together and the marbles get rolled around a little bit, it's very hard to describe and it's very hard to solicit support for, and you may not know what's happening. And there's sort of an interplay between the warrior ethos and help-seeking. So by calling attention to it and saying, look, you're going to have these experiences and there's a good chance you're going to have combat stress, and there's help out there, that can help you get better right on the battlefield so that you don't have to succumb to things like post-traumatic stress. And then should that happen, we have all these evidence-based treatments that can help you heal. So it's very comprehensive, but it's very, very reassuring to warriors to know today that you have social workers and other mental health providers on the battlefield and at home to take care of you and your family if things come up.
Yeah, I can understand that. I don't know what stress, you know, you would encounter being in combat. And when these guys come back who are affected by that, what's life like for them? What are they like? What has combat done to them? Could you tell me a little bit?
You know, it's a mixed bag. You can have experiences where it can cause you to have to take a knee, have, anxiety, sleeplessness. Sometimes people will turn to substance abuse. There may even be suicidality. On the other hand, there's post-traumatic growth. And so people can, you know, have these amazing spiritual humbling and enlightening experiences where you help other people. And so it's kind of a mixed bag. There's really not a magic formula like three licks to the center of the Tootsie Pop and you're traumatized. Everybody has a different limit to pain. And, we can recognize the signs and symptoms of it early to get ahead of it. And even if somebody succumbs to it, it can be treated and healed. In fact, I myself surprisingly suffered from it and had some problems when I first came home from Iraq and sought help. And within 3 months, I was back to my old self. But it was kind of shocking that here I am, somebody who does it for a living and thinks about it all the time and researches and writes on it. And it can still happen. And I think that's powerful for leaders. And then finally, to stand up as a colonel in a formation of hundreds of men and women and say, I get help. So, you know, there should be no problem with you getting help. I will support you if you need it. It was very, very important that our senior leadership, you know, sets the example like they do on so many other issues.
I think that's great. That's really interesting to point that out. Well, what about now? You're in civilian life. When did you start your organization, VictoryLeadershipConsulting.com? that's your website, .com. You did that. Was that right after you got out of the service after 34 years?
Yes, I was very fortunate. I had an opportunity to do what it was initially expected to be sort of a filler for somebody for about 4 months. And then I had this opportunity to continue to do this now for about 4 years, working with the Veterans Health Administration as a high reliability functional subject matter expert on, you know, running safer hospitals. And I've come to love it. And so now I've, you know, continued to get training on different types of coaching modalities to help groups and individuals, you know, grow and achieve, again, the best version of themselves and help their organizations grow with them.
And I also pointed out, and you mentioned to me, by the way, that you can do this online. You teach social work at Tulane in New Orleans, and also you teach it at Fordham, which is in New York State. Interesting you can do that and still stay in Red Rock, right, in Texas?
That's correct, yeah. So right from my desk at Round Rock, it's a pretty awesome, brave new world. But actually, it's quite interactive to do it that way because, you know, no one can hide from you in the classroom when you're looking at them in the face online. And so, I get an opportunity to teach a new generation of social workers on things like design thinking, using logic models, disruptive innovation, leading nonprofits, and securing funding. And I get to continue my own research agenda on evidence-based treatments for warriors with PTSD and other conditions that occur with them, like moral injury and sexual trauma, sleep disorders, things like that. So it's very, very rewarding. And, you know, to see, you know, there's another generation of people coming up who want to lead change on some really important issues, you know, from a values-driven perspective.
Explain a little bit for me how you teach a class online. They're watching you on a TV monitor, and you're watching them in a classroom. Is that about how it works?
Yeah, it kind of harkens back to Hollywood Squares, if you remember the show. And so I'm like Paul Lynde in the Hollywood Square in the middle there, and they're all around me, and we can see each other. And
yep.
They can turn off their cameras, but I ask them not to unless they've had like a root canal the night before. But, yeah, it's very, very interactive. I can do group work. I can split them up into separate rooms so they can do some work in small groups, come back to the main room and report. I can take them to different lectures and use multimedia at the same time. So it's really remarkable what you can do. I was initially against it as a social worker because it requires so much human contact, but even today we do a lot of consulting and counseling through telemedicine, and it's quite robust. And this generation of kids is growing up with this as being normal.
Yeah, and I understand that. How did you get into teaching? Where did that idea come to you? Or how did that door open?
Yeah, I've always been sort of a part-time academic. I started teaching as a TA in college and just really never stopped. So actually concurrent with my military career, I've taught probably at a dozen or so universities over the course of my career, and I had the opportunity to transition to doing it full-time, which is wonderful. And again, because it's online, you know, I can multitask and do more than one job. And you know, for you know people who are thinking about careers and struggling with the idea of, like, how do I pay for daycare, or, you know, how can I spend more time with family and have a better work-life balance, it's a wonderful way to do work. It has its limitations, of course, and there's still things I'd like to do in person. But I think it's definitely something that can reach people who might not have access to care, you know, like people in rural settings and so on. And same with students. I have students dialing in from Hawaii and Europe. I did a guest lecture in Ukraine recently, so it's pretty impressive what you can do these days.
Boy, it really is amazing what you can do. Let's talk a little bit about your firm, your organization, you know, and what you do and who you work with. It's called Victory Leadership Consulting. That's a really interesting name. Tell me a little bit about the name. How did you come up with that?
So the name harkens back to my combat experience. My organization, the 30th Medical Brigade, which I spent time in Iraq with, was the Victory Medics. Out of Heidelberg, Germany. And so the other idea behind the word victory is achieving success. It's not really so much about winning, but having a leading and winning organization, as it were, that's values-driven. And then, you know, leadership's at the forefront of what I do. I think you can lead even in a supportive role as a servant leader. You can lead by being a transformational thinker. And so there's different styles for different contexts. We offer a variety of services, from individual coaching at just about every level of the organization to group coaching, helping them look at organizational dynamics, changing their mindset and their culture. And I think if you train the mindset first or teach the mindset first, you can then share the skill set and give them the tool set to be successful. So there are some high reliability principles that were born out of the nuclear and aviation industries that can apply to hospitals. Do you know we lose a 747's worth of patients every day in hospitals to human error, yet people go in every day, but you would never get on a plane if that was the case. So, you know, bringing those safety principles into the hospital setting is very, very important. And it's not that we're going to expect perfection, but to be obsessed with zero harm and obsessed with, you know, failure and learning from mistakes and not repeating them, and holding people accountable from a shared accountability standpoint, but making it safe for them to report errors so we can get better and prevent harm.
Give me a little idea of how you consult. It's according to your website, you specialize in healthcare leadership coaching. That in itself is kind of a unique concept. Talk to me about who you work with in that category of healthcare leadership coaching.
Yes. So normally I begin at the top of the organization with a medical center director and, you know, try to figure out what keeps them awake at night. What do they need? Do they have a thought partner they can talk to safely outside of their chain of command, as it were, and help them think through problem sets, let them, you know, and try not to tell leaders what to do, but help them come to healthier personal decisions and business decisions that, you know, will have minimal, you know, the best possible impact on the organization, and kind of keep their any issues they have and challenges they have out of their work in a very safe holding environment. And then if they allow me to, I will start looking at their subordinate leaders, and everything's confidential at every level. And then I share trends with the leader at their level that I see. and make recommendations that they can use to build on their successes and minimize the impact of anything that's been problematic in the organization. And my sites are doing really well. I had one that was in the very bottom of the VHA that's now sort of the showpiece, and you know, just changing little things. You know, sometimes I think people are worried that I'm going to come in and tell them everything's wrong and tear it down, but these little disruptive innovations, what's missing from a process? Have you gone off the rails and forgotten about the processes that helped you be successful? You know, how do you continue to challenge the organization to be its best version of itself and bring the right people in and continue to learn and be an organization that is a constant learner using continuous process improvement? So all these things together help that director run a better ship, as it were.
It would seem that you would have to go to the organization or wherever they are to learn a lot about that and where they need help. Am I right on that? You can't do all of that based in, you know, Red Rock, can you? Or can you? Round Rock.
Yes and no. So most of my work is online, but you're right. You know, I try to get out to each of my sites at least a couple times a year and help them do some strategic planning, sit down with different groups of people and work through different problem sets and look at their safety culture. And definitely being on the ground gives you that sort of picture's worth a thousand words. But you'd be amazed with what you can accomplish at a distance. And as long as you create the kind of psychological safety where leaders feel safe to share their biggest vulnerabilities, personal and professional, with you, you can help them through a lot of issues without actually being there on the ground.
And I assume you're working with managerial level people rather than doctors and people of that category in the you know, the health field. Would that be right?
It's a little bit of both, but yes, the leanings are towards leaders, but a lot of times clinicians like myself, a social worker or physicians, nurse practitioners and so on, they're often put in leadership roles because they're the senior person on the ground, but they haven't received any formal leadership training, something we sort of take for granted in the military. So
exactly.
I can help them create curriculum to develop leaders, help them understand the business behind the clinical area they run, and, you know, and not speak the language. Like, we don't want to say you need to be more productive to make the hospital more money. But, for example, if you don't close your notes out as a practitioner, you're not communicating what transpired between you and the patient, and that's a safety issue. Oh, by the way, if you close them out, you do get reimbursed for that. You know, but the real issue is running a safer facility. And I think if they employ these safety principles, the money will come.
Can you give me a success stories? I mean, you've been doing this long enough to have some success stories and see where you're making an impact, you know, where situations have improved.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I just this week I was doing some coaching at a mid-level for a mid-level leader who is in charge of sterile processing, and the sterile processing group that provides all the instrumentation for surgeries and dental care, GYN care and GI care, for example, had some problems. And a brand new employee who had literally been on the ground for about 2 days did what we call stopping the line, where she called attention to a safety issue, which stopped surgeries for about a week. All these patients were affected. And then they had to sort of retrain themselves, address the safety issues. And even though there was a good chance these surgeries would have gone off without a hitch, the idea is that we're so obsessed with safety, and if that was our son and daughter on the OR table, that, you know, we would not want them to come to any harm, even if it was only a 1% chance. So they stopped the line, retrained the staff. It actually happened a second time. But to be in an organization that values every employee to the point where a brand new employee can say, this doesn't feel safe to me, I think we should stop our process, regardless of the financial and clinical consequences, look at ourselves, learn from it, and do better, is really remarkable. And so that's the kind of culture we want to create in medical organizations.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Talk to me about some of the subjects that you like to teach as a professor. What would they include?
So my two favorites probably are the one I teach at Fordham I like the most is on childhood trauma. I did a lot of work with adult survivors of sexual assault. You can imagine people in those situations want to leave that family dynamic, and so many join the military. And so I found myself doing a lot of rape survivor work or assault survivor work from childhood. And the other one I really enjoy that is very impactful on the coaching side is I do a course on leading and nonprofit leadership and how social workers' skills can translate to organizations very effectively, you know, in terms of understanding organizational behavior, group dynamics, and, you know, how stress impacts leaders and how that can translate into affecting our consumers or our bottom line. And so, you know, basically helping social workers understand that they have all these superpowers, but we're remiss in social work in that we don't talk about leadership enough in our community. And if there was ever a time for social workers to lead, right, it's right now with all the issues facing our global community as well as our own country right now.
You know, it sounds like you're really into some very, very interesting arenas and areas. How do organizations get you in? Do they get you involved? Organizations call you? Explain how you get involved with the various entities that you do work with.
Yeah, as a veteran small-owned business, there are contracts out there to do this type of work with different industries. Right now, you know, I've had the opportunity to plug Victory Leadership Consulting into an organization called Rocket Data, and they have a contract with the Veterans Health Administration. So I essentially subcontract myself out. You know, we're looking at other spaces like civilian healthcare as well as the Department of Defense. Individually, people can get on my website, which I still need to continue to develop out, to get leadership consulting and counseling and do this kind of work both individually or organizationally. But, you know, there's a great need for organizations to have coaching. I think it's great that they invest in their own people to give them a coach. You know, some people feel like they don't want somebody looking over your shoulder, but we're really free confidential help. I don't report to anybody's leadership. I don't have any legal obligation to, you know, report concerns to anybody else. I simply have the opportunity to point things out to that person, say, how are all these things working for you? And are you satisfied with where you are? And do you still have some things that keep you up at night? And how can I help?
And can ordinary individuals contact you? You go onto your website if they felt you would be the one who could help them in their situation, whatever it might be. Do they come to you like that? You get individuals who want coaching?
Yes, and I absolutely would encourage that. You know, you don't have to have a medical background to benefit from this. I consider my organization a flexible construct, and I can be very agile because of my background and adapt to the cultures I sit with. You know, the clients, the expert on themselves. And so a lot of these things just have commonalities. You know, I can learn their technical language, but, you know, they navigating different cultural nuances, individual personality issues and organizational issues are something that I'm very good at and been doing for over 35 years. And so, you know, there's no cost to checking us out and giving me a call and having a conversation like you and I are right now.
Well, I'm glad we talked about that, and I think that's very, very important indeed. I want to point out again, you have a great website if anybody is interested in getting in touch with you. Your name is Jeffrey Yarvis, and your website is victoryleadershipconsulting.com. So, as you point out, Jeffrey, if anybody's interested and they want to have a chat with you, that's the way to go to get in touch with you. Listen, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. I know you had an amazing career in the military, and it's been great chatting with you. I'm glad you took the time to talk with us. Okay? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Doug. It's wonderful to meet you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Same to you. Thank you, Jeff. That's it for today, everybody. One of the most interesting coaches right there. We talk to a lot of coaches, and I'm glad we do. In any event, that'll do it for this edition of Close Up Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next time. Till then, take care, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.